हरे
continuing with Garuda and the pastime that he had asked his mother, how come we have to do all this service for the snakes? And so she said that due to this wager, then they had become slaves. And so going to the snakes, then he asked them, what can I bring or get or do that will release us from this bondage? And they said, you bring us by force this Amrita from heaven. So then he went to go do that. He wanted something to eat. His mother told him of a place of Nishadas. That was kind of like an appetizer. Then he went to his father, went and asked about something more serious to eat. He told him about these two, crazed brothers, one in the form of a monster elephant and the other in a monster turtle, that you could, do them in the world some good and eat them, so then, like that. And then he having picked them up, he went looking for a perch. He came to a tree that had a branch that was 100 yojanas long, and said, you can sit on that. And he sat on it, but it broke. And so now, section 30, we find out what happened. Sauti said, at the very touch by Garuda, a great might with his feet, the branch of the tree broke as it was caught by Garuda. Casting his eyes around in wonder, he saw Valakila Rishis hanging therefrom with heads downward and engaged in ascetic penances. Right? It means the Valakilas had tied themselves to this branch, so they're hanging upside down under the branch doing the austerities. So the Valakilias that I remember, there's 60,000 of them, and they're like the size of a thumb, right? So they're small wallas, but powerful. I think they sit on the chariot wheel, on the axle of the sun god's chariot, and they learn from him, from that position. So, they're not ordinary sages. Reflecting that if that bough fell down, right, bough means a branch, the rishis would be slain. The mighty one held the elephant and tortoise still more firmly with his claws. And from fear of slaying the rishis and desire of saving them, held that bough in his beaks and rose on his wings. Right? So he caught it with his mouth. The great rishis were struck with wonder at the sight of that act of which was beyond even the power of the gods, and gave that mighty bird a name. And they said, as this ranger of the skies rises on its wings bearing a heavy burden, let this foremost of birds, having snakes for his food, be called Garuda, bearer of heavy weight. And shaking the mountains by his wings, Garuda leisurely coursed through the skies, and as he soared with the elephant and the tortoise in his claws, he beheld various regions underneath. Right? That's lunch. He's not going to let go of that. Desiring as he did to save the Valakilias, he saw not a spot whereon to sit. At last he went to that foremost of mountains called Gandamadana. Right? That's the big mountain that's like... Yeah, it's a major mountain, but it's beyond what the Himalayas that we see here. These are like considered smaller. And that's where Arjuna and the Pandavas, that they would stay. Like Kuvera has his one of his palaces on the top of that. You know, so it's a very special mountain. There he saw his father Kasyapa engaged in ascetic devotions. Kasyapa also saw a son, that ranger of the skies, of divine form, possessed of great splendor and energy and strength, and endued with the speed of the wind or the mind, huge as the mountain peak, a ready smiter like the curse of a Brahmin, inconceivable, indestructible, frightful to all creatures, possessed of great prowess, terrible of the splendor of Agni himself, and incapable of being overcome by the deities, Danavas, and invincible Rakshasas. Here deities means the demigods. Capable of splitting mountain summits and sucking the ocean itself, means, you know, drinking the whole ocean, and destroying the three worlds, fierce and looking like Yama himself. The illustrious Kasyapa, seeing him approach, and knowing also his motive, spoke unto him these words. Kasyapa said, O child, do not commit a rash act, for then thou wouldest have to suffer pain. The Valakilyas, supporting themselves by drinking the rays of the sun, might, if angry, blast thee. Sauti continued. Kasyapa then propitiated, for the sake of his son, the Valakilyas of exceeding good fortune, and whose sins had been destroyed by ascetic penances. And Kasyapa said, Ye whose wealth is asceticism, the essay of Garuda is for the good of all creatures. The task is great that he is striving to accomplish. It behooveth you to accord him your permission. Sauti continued, Those ascetics thus addressed by the illustrious Kasyapa abandoned that vow and went to the sacred mountain of Himavat for purposes of ascetic penances. After those rishis had gone away, the son of Vinata, with voice obstructed by the bow in his beaks, asked his father Kasyapa, saying, O illustrious one, where shall I throw this arm of the tree? O illustrious one, indicate to me some region without human beings. Then Kasyapa spoke of a mountain without human beings, with caves and dales, always covered with snow, and incapable of approach by ordinary creatures, even in thought. And the great bird bearing that branch, that elephant, and that tortoise, proceeded with great speed towards that mountain. The great arm of the tree with which that bird of huge body flew away could not be girt around with a cord made of 100 cowhides. Wow. Because a cowhide means you take the cowhide and you start cutting from the outside and it keeps going in a circle and it gets smaller and smaller, you know? You know, so a cowhide is very big, so it would make a very long rope. So take 100 of those, and still that wouldn't go around that tree branch. You know, I guess if it's 100 yojanas long, it must be quite fat. You know? Garuda, the lord of birds, then flew away for hundreds of thousands of yojanas within the shortest of time, and going according to the direction of his father to that mountain, almost in a moment, that ranger of skies let fall the gigantic bough, and it fell with a great noise, and that prince of mountains struck with the storm raised by Garuda's wings, and the trees thereon dropped showers of flowers, and the peaks decked with gems and gold adorned that great mountain itself, were loosened and fell down on all sides. And the falling bough struck down numerous trees which, with golden flowers amid dark foliage, shone there like clouds charged with lightning, and those trees bright as gold, falling down upon the ground, and dyed with mountain metals, shone as if they were bathed in the rays of the sun. Then that best of birds, Garuda, perching on the summit of that mountain, ate both the elephant and the tortoise, rose on his wings with great speed from the top of the mountain. Okay. So he sees that he was very careful here, right? Means he could say, well, it was no fault of mine, I just sat on the bough like that. But the point was, is the sages were there, so then he did his best. And even though he saved them, but still you could say that, well, why didn't you look first and notice we were there before you landed on the branch, right, to cause the trouble? So then getting their blessings only, then they left the branch, and then he was able to throw that branch. Otherwise it was too big, you know, there was no nice place to put it down, right? So, you know, one should always be careful. Even if it appears it's not your fault, still it doesn't mean etiquette and care is not taken. Right? Does that make sense? And various omens began to appear among the gods, foreboding fear. Indra's favorite thunderbolt blazed up in a fright. Right? It means the demigods, they're sitting there in heaven, and they're getting all kinds of bad omens. Right? So then they're starting to get worried. What, you know, what can cause bad omens for them? Otherwise, you know, Bali Maharaj is coming with his, you know, unlimited army of demons, or Moishasura, or, you know, something like that is what there generally happens when this, these omens come. Meteors with flames and smoke loosened from the welkin shot down during the day. Welkin's the, you know, like the sky, the firmament. And the weapons of the Vasus, the Rudras, the Adityas, the Shabyas, the Maruts, and other gods began to spend their force against one another. Such a thing had never happened even during the war between the gods and the Asuras. Oh, so that means these omens were even worse than any other omens they've ever seen. So they can't imagine what's going to go wrong now. And the winds blew accompanied with thunder, and meteors fell by thousands, and the sky, though cloudless, roared tremendously. And he who was the god of gods shed showers of blood, and the flowery garlands on the necks of the gods faded, and their prowess suffered diminution. Right, because the demigods, that's one of the qualities, their garlands never fade. That's how you can always tell who's the demigod, because, you know, as the day goes by, the garland looks the same in the afternoon as it did in the morning, right? You know, that was one of the ones how Damayanti could understand who was demigod and who was Nala, because Nala's garland was faded, and he would blink. Demigods don't blink, and their garlands don't fade. And terrible masses of clouds dropped thick showers of blood. And the dust raised by the winds darkened the splendor of the very coronets of the god. Coronets are their crowns. And he of the thousand sacrifices, Indra, with the other gods, perplexed with fear at the sight of those dark forebodings, spoke under Brihaspati thus, "Why, O worshipable one, have these natural disturbances suddenly arisen? No foe do I behold who would oppress us in war." Brihaspati answered, "O chief of the gods, O thou of a thousand sacrifices, it is from thy fault and carelessness, and owing also to the ascetic penance of the high-souled great rishis, the Valakilyas, that the son of Kasyapa and Vinata, arranger of the skies, endued with great strength, and possessing the capacity of assuming at will any form, is approaching to take away the soma. And that bird, foremost among all endued with great strength, is able to rob you of the soma. Everything is possible with him. The unachievable he can achieve." Sauti continued, "Indra, having heard these words, then spoke unto those that guarded the Amrita, saying, A bird endued with great strength and energy has set his heart on taking away the Amrita. I warn you beforehand so that he may not succeed in taking it away by force. Brihaspati has told me that his strength is immeasurable, and the gods, hearing of it, were amazed and took precautions. And they stood surrounding the Amrita, and Indra also of great prowess, the wielder of the thunder, stood with them. And the gods were curious, and the gods wore curious breastplates of gold, of great value, and set with gems, and bright leathern armor of great toughness." It means, you know, this breastplate is made of metal, is out of gold, right? Reducted jewels. And then all the joints and everything, then they were made of leather and stuff. But tough leather, so like rhinoceros skin and stuff like that. It's really tough. Right? And the mighty deities wielded various sharp-edged weapons of terrible shapes, countless in number, emitting, even all of them, sparks of fire with smoke. And they were also armed with many a discus and iron mace, furnished with spikes and trident, battle axe and various kinds of sharp pointed missiles, and polished swords and maces of terrible form, all befitting their respective bodies, and decked with celestial ornaments and resplendent with those mighty arms. The gods awaited there, their fears allayed. Right? So now that they were all there ready, you know, with their weapons and all that, then they felt peaceful now. They're going to, you know, there's no fear. And the gods of incomparable strength, energy, and splendor resolved to protect the Amrita, capable of splitting the towns of the Asuras, all displayed themselves in forms resplendent as the fire. And in consequence of the gods standing there, that would-be battlefield, owing to hundreds of thousands of maces furnished with iron spikes, shone like another firmament illuminated by the rays of the sun. So ends the 13th section of the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. So we see Garuda, one of the main things that Brihaspati mentioned why there was trouble is Garuda had gotten the blessings of Valakilias. So getting the blessings of the sages, that actually made him invincible. You know, he didn't mention first that he's so powerful, this, that, and no, he first mentioned he has the blessings of the Valakilias. And they're very powerful sages, so when they give blessings, then they'll have very serious result. Then on top of that, he has, you know, unlimited strength and prowess and all this. But the demigods here, we notice, this is the natural principle, is though they're devotees, the first thing that they do is depend upon their own strength. Right? Then, if that doesn't work, then they go to Vishnu. Does that make sense? While persons like the Pandavas, they depend upon Krishna first. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So they're always dependent upon Krishna. Well, here the Devas, though they're devotees, then this is what classifies them as third class devotees, is that first they depend on their own skills. Then if that doesn't work, then they turn to God. Right? Well, the Asuras means they first make a plan. If that doesn't work, they don't turn to God, they make a next plan. Right? So God doesn't come into the equation. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the Asura. Section 31. Shaunaka said, O son of Suta, what was Indra's fault? What his act of carelessness? Right? Because they said it's due to your own fault and carelessness that this is happening. Then he's got the blessings of Valakilias. He'll be the one that will actually carry out the result of your offenses and carelessness. Does that make sense? Right? Because it's two different things. You're supposed to get a result. That you'll get. Then a particular person is qualified, then we'll give that. But you don't have to. You know what I'm saying? That's your free will. Does that make sense? Yeah? So, means whoever takes part in it, then they get the reaction. You know, even though it may be a natural position for you to take, if you don't take it, then you don't get the reaction. They'll get the reaction anyway. Right? You don't have to say, well, it's their karma, they're supposed to get it anyway. That's there, but you don't have to be the instrument. Right? Because the instrument thinks it's the doer, therefore it gets the result. But it's only an instrument. Is that? Makes any sense? Okay. How was Garuda born in consequence of the ascetic penances of the Valakilias? Okay. Okay. Why also Kasyapa, a Brahmana, had the king of birds for a son? Right? A Brahmin expects to get a Brahmin boy, not a bird. Right? Like that. Why too was he invincible of all creatures and unslayable of all? Why also was that ranger of the skies capable of going into every place at will and of mustering at will any measure of strength? If these are described in the Puranas, I should like to hear them. Right? It means, you know, it's natural. He has all these qualities, but there has to be some reason he has them. Only by doing a particular activity you get such a result. Right? So that he had such a result there, that means what did he do to get that as the result of his previous activities. Does that make sense? Sauti said, "What thou askest me is indeed the subject of the Purana. O twice-born one, listen as I briefly recite it all. Once upon a time, when the Lord of creation, Kasyapa, was engaged in a sacrifice from desire of offspring, the rishis, the gods, and the Gandharvas all gave him help. And Indra was appointed by Kasyapa to bring the sacrificial fuel, and with him those ascetics, the Valakilyas, and all the other deities, and the Lord Indra, taking up, according to his own strength, a weight that was mountain-like, brought it without any fatigue." Right? In other words, Indra was supposed to bring all the fuel, you know, for the yajna, so all the wood and like that. So they're bringing it, you know, with great, bringing huge amounts with great prowess. Right? And, you know, so naturally they're doing big work, but at the same time they're a little proud of their big work. "And he saw on the way some rishis," this is Indra, "of bodies of the measure of the thumb, altogether carrying one single stalk of palash, Bhutia frondosa," if anybody just wanted to know. Oh, leaf. A single stalk of a palash leaf. Right? Because they're only this big. So all 60,000 of them, they're all there and carrying one palash, you know, the stem. Oh, yeah, the stalk of a palash leaf. You know, it's a little stem that comes with, you know, that the leaf's on the end. "And those rishis were, from want of food, very lean and almost merged in their own bodies." Right? Pretty thin. Yeah. "And they were so weak that they were much afflicted when sunk in the water that collected in an indentation on the road produced by the hoof of a cow." And a cow had walked on the road and made an indent, some water collected there. And so they're walking and they fell into that. And they were having some problems. Right? "And Purandara," that's Indra, "proud of his strength, beheld them with surprise and laughed at them in derision, soon left them behind, insulting them." Right? He laughed that they fell, rather than just, you know, stopping and helping them out of the hole. He laughed at these, you know, guys are so weak from their penances and they're so small and that they're carrying so little and they've fallen into a cow's, you know, hoof print, you know, mud puddle, you know, so then, you know, like that. "And in derision soon left them behind, insulting them, besides by passing over their heads." So he didn't even just walk around, he just stepped over the puddle where they were, like that. "And those rishis, being thus insulted, were filled with rage and sorrow." Right? "And they made preparations for a great sacrifice, at which Indra was terrified." Yeah, rage means they're angry that the, you know, the rules of proper etiquette, not, they're not upset necessarily that they themselves are insulted, but that this is not the way to behave. And they're very sorry that such a great personality is behaving in this way. You know, it doesn't set a proper example, it's not going to be beneficial for him. Being the king of heaven, if he suffers, then others will also suffer because they're under his protection. So, you know, it's going to be a big problem for everybody that Indra is behaving so badly. "And they made preparations for a great sacrifice of which Indra was terrified. Hear, O Shonaka, of the wish for accomplishment of which those vow-observing, wise, and excellent ascetics poured clarified butter of the sacrificial fire with loudly uttered mantras. Quote, there shall be another Indra of all gods, capable of going everywhere at will, and of mustering at will any measure of energy, and striking fear into the present king of the gods. By the fruit of our ascetic penance, let one rise, fleet as the mind, and fierce withal. And the Lord of the Celestials of 100 sacrifices," that's Indra, "having come to know of this, became very much alarmed, and sought the protection of the vow-observing Kasyapa. And the Prajapati Kasyapa, hearing everything from Indra went to the Valakilyas and asked them if their sacrifice had been successful. And those truth-speaking rishis replied to him, saying, "Let it be as thou sayest." Right? In other words, he asked, was your yajna successful? And they said, "Let it be how you said." Right? Means you said, was it successful? So, yes. Because you have said it, then let it be like that. And it's in a very gentle way, rather than saying, "That's right, you know. And the Prajapati Kasyapa, pacifying them, spake unto them as follows: "By the word of Brahman, this one Indra hath been made the lord of the three worlds. Ye ascetics also are striving to create another Indra. Ye excellent ones, it behooveth you not to falsify the word of Brahman. Let not also this purpose for accomplishing which ye are striving be rendered futile." In other words, you're creating another Indra, but that's not actually correct, because Lord Brahma already created one. So to create a second one, then there'll be a problem. But at the same time, you have a purpose, let it not go to waste. You know, let it be successful. But in other words, consider these two. You know, you should be successful. But at the same time, as, you know, Indra is a post set up by, you know, the Lord's creation. And so things should run like that. Does that make sense? "Let there spring an Indra, lord of winged creatures, endued with excess of strength. Be gracious unto Indra who is suppliant before you." Right? He's become very humble and offering prayers. And the Valakilyas, thus addressed by Kasyapa, after observing reverence to the first of the Munis, namely the Prajapati Kasyapa, spake unto him, because Kasyapa is the son of Brahma, right? So all other rishis will, you know, take him, will have great respect for him. The Valakilyas said, "O Prajapati, this sacrifice of us all is for an Indra. Indeed, this hath also been meant for a son being born unto thee. Let this task be now left to thee, and in this matter do whatever thou seest to be good and proper." Right? So they were making that this Indra should come, but that he would be a son of Kasyapa. So Kasyapa changed it that he wouldn't just be a regular boy, but he would be a bird. Right? So it's, even though he's equal to Indra, it still will be in a different category, so there won't be any necessarily conflict. Does that make sense? And Saudi continued, "Meanwhile, moved by the desire of offspring, the good daughter of Daksha, the vow-observing, amiable, and fortunate Vinata, her ascetic penances over, having purified herself with a bath in that season when connubial companionship might prove fruitful, approached her lord, and Kasyapa spake unto her, 'Respected one, the sacrifice commenced by me hath borne fruit. What hath been desired by thee shall come to pass. Two heroic sons shall be born unto thee, who shall be the lords of the three worlds. By the penances of the Valakilyas, and by virtue of the desire which I commence my sacrifice, those sons shall be of exceedingly good fortune, and worshipped in the three worlds.' And the illustrious Kasyapa spoke unto her again, 'Bear thou these auspicious seeds with great care. These two will be the lords of all winged creatures. These heroic rangers of the skies will be respected in all the worlds, and capable of assuming any form at will.'" Right, so they're both, it means they both move in the sky. One is a charioteer, right, of the sun god, and the other one a bird, right? So they both fly in the sky. And the Prajapati, gratified with all that took place, then addressed Indra of 100 sacrifices, saying, "Thou shalt have two brothers of great energy and prowess, who shall be to thee even as the helpmates. From them no injury shall result unto thee. Let thy sorrow cease. Thou shalt continue as the lord of all. Let not, however, the utterers of the name of Brahma be ever again slighted by thee. Nor let the very wrathful ones, whose words are even the thunderbolt, be ever again insulted by thee. Indra, thus addressed, went to heaven, his fears dispelled, and Binata also, her purpose fulfilled, was exceedingly glad. And she gave birth to two sons, Aruna and Garuda. And Aruna, of undeveloped body, became the forerunner of the sun, and Garuda was vested with the lordship over the birds. O thou of Bhrigu's race, hearken now to the mighty achievement of Garuda. So ends the 31st section of Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. So he's saying is that now they won't be your enemies, they will actually help you. Right? That was Kasyapa's point. But he said, don't ever again insult the Brahmins, right? Because they're more powerful than you and can create a lot of problem for you. So don't ever do that again. Right? That's just, it's not proper. Section 32. Sauti said, O foremost of Brahmanas, the gods having prepared for battle in that way, Garuda, the king of birds, soon came upon those wise ones, and the gods, beholding him of excessive strength, began to quake with fear and strike one another with their weapons. And amongst those that guarded the Soma was Brahmana, the celestial architect, of measureless might, effulgent as the electric fire and of great energy. And after a terrific encounter lasting only a moment, managed by the Lord of managed by the Lord of Birds with his talons, beak and wings, he lay as dead on the fields. Okay, so the fight was only a moment. And the rains of the skies, making the worlds dark with the dust raised by the hurricane of his wings, overwhelmed the celestials with it. And the latter, overwhelmed with that dust, swooned away. You know, demigods, by all the dust raised by Garuda's wings, then they fainted. And the immortals who guarded the Amrita, blinded by that dust, could no longer see Garuda. Even thus did Garuda agitate the region of the heavens. And even thus he mangled the gods with the wounds inflicted by his wings and beak. Then the god of a thousand eyes commanded Vayu, the god of wind, saying, dispel thou this shower of dust soon. O Maruta, this is indeed thy task. Then the mighty Vayu soon drove away that dust, and when the darkness had disappeared, the celestials attacked Garuda. And as he of great strength might was attacked by the gods, he began to roar aloud, like the great cloud that appeareth in the sky at the end of the Yuga, frightening every creature. And that king of birds of great energy, that slayer of hostile heroes, then rose on his wings. All the wise ones, the celestials, with Indra among them, armed with double-edged broad swords, iron maces, furnished with sharp spikes, pointed lances, maces, bright bows, and many a discus of the form of the sun, saw him overhead. And the king of birds attacked them on all sides with showers of various weapons, and fought exceedingly hard without wavering for a moment. And the son of Vinata, of great prowess, blazing in the sky, attacked the gods on all sides with his wings and breast. And blood began to flow copiously from the bodies of the gods, mangled by the talons and beak of Garuda. Overcome by the Lord of Birds, the Sadhyas and the Gandharvas fled eastwards. The Vasus with the Rudras towards the south, the Adityas towards the west, and the twin Ashwinis towards the north. Gifted with great energy, they retreated, fighting, looking back at every moment on their enemy. And Garuda had encounters with the Yakshas, Aswakranda of great courage, Rainuka and bold Krantanaka, Tapana, Uluka, Swasanaka, Nimesha, Paruja, and Pulina. And the son of Vinata mangled them with his wings, talons, and beak. Like Shiva himself, that chastiser of enemies, and the holder of Pinaka, in rage at the end of Yuga. And those yakshas of great mind and courage, mangled all over by the range of the skies, looked like masses of black clouds dropping thick showers of blood. And Garuda deprived them, depriving them of life, and then went to where the Amrita was, and he saw that it was surrounded on all sides by fire, and the terrible flames of that fire covered the entire sky, and moved by violent winds, they seemed bent on burning the sun itself. The illustrious Garuda then assumed 90 times 90 mouths, and quickly drinking the waters of many rivers with those mouths, and returning with great speed. That chastiser of enemies, having wings for his vehicle, extinguished that fire with that water. And extinguishing that fire, he assumed a very small form, desirous of entering into the place where the Soma was. 90 times 90. That's a lot. It's like what? 90 times...
8,100.
You sure? No. 80,100. You said 80,000 or 8,000?
8,100.
No, but 10 times 10 is 10,000. No, 10 times 10 is 100. Okay. Okay, 90 times 90. Okay. Okay. Thus ends the 32nd section in the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Section 33. Sauti said, "And that bird, assuming a golden body, bright as the rays of the sun, entered with great force the region where the Soma was, like a torrent entering the ocean. And he saw, placed near the Soma, a wheel of steel, keen-edged and sharp as the razor, revolving incessantly." Right, so there's a big chakra around it that's super sharp, you know, and spinning. "And that fierce instrument of the splendor of the blazing sun and of terrible form had been devised by the gods for cutting into pieces all robbers of the Soma. Garuda, seeing a passage through it, stopped there for a moment, diminished his body. In an instant he passed through the spokes of that wheel. Within the line of the wheel he beheld stationed there, for guarding the Soma, two great snakes of the effulgence of blazing fire, with tongues bright as the lightning flash, of great energy, with mouth emitting fire, with blazing eyes, containing poison, very terrible, always in anger, and of great activity." So it's like he saw that in the spokes of the wheel there's a gap, so he became very small and just went through the gap. Then when he got inside, then next to the pot, there were two big snakes, and very venomous and angry and very active. So they're always moving, ready to strike. "Their eyes were ceaselessly inflamed with rage, and they were winkless." Right? So they didn't blink, so you couldn't just wait until they blinked and then do something, right? "He who may be seen by even one of the two of the two would instantly be reduced to ashes." Okay. Means that's if they bite you, but before that, if you're seen by one of them, just them seeing you, you'll be burnt to ashes, right? Right? Does that make sense? So it's kind of like the biting you is a bit academic here. "The bird of fair feathers suddenly covered their eyes with dust, and unseen by them, he attacked them from all sides. And the son of Vinata, that ranger of the skies, attacked their bodies, mangled them into pieces. He then approached the Soma without loss of time. Then the mighty son of Vinata, taking up the Amrita from the place where it was kept, rose on his wings with great speed, breaking into pieces the machine that had surrounded it." That big chakra, this time, he just went through it as small. This time he just takes a full form and goes up through it and just breaks it. "And the bird soon came out, taking the Amrita, but without drinking it himself. And he then wended on his way without the least fatigue, darkening the splendor of the sky. And the son of Vinata then met Vishnu on his way along the sky." "And Narayana was gratified at that act of self-denial on the part of Garuda." It means he stole the nectar, but he came to get it for the snakes, so that's what he was doing. He got the nectar, and now he drank some, and then he takes. No, he says it's for the snakes, so he didn't even touch it. So So Lord Vishnu, he is very pleased with that. You know, he's just performing his duties, not worrying about himself. And that deity, knowing no deterioration, said under the ranger of the skies, "Oh, I am inclined to grant thee a boon." The ranger of the skies thereupon said, "I shall stay above thee." And he again spoke unto Narayan these words, "I shall be immortal and free from disease without drinking Amrita." Vishnu said unto the son of Vinata, "Be it so." Right? So he says, I'll always be above you, and even without drinking this nectar, then I will be immortal and without any disease. And so then Vishnu blessed him, saying, "Be it so." Garuda, receiving these two boons, told Vishnu, "I also grant thee a boon. Therefore, let the possessor of the six attributes ask of me." Vishnu then asked the mighty Garuda to become his carrier, and he made the bird sit on the flagstaff of his car, saying, "Even thus shalt thou stay above me." Right? So, on a chariot, you always have a flag. So Garuda is always on the flag of Vishnu. So that way, then he's staying above Vishnu. But at the same time, Vishnu asked, his boon was that he'd be my carrier. Right? So like that. And the ranger of the skies, of great speed, saying unto Narayan, "Be it so," swiftly wended on his way, mocking the wind with his fleetness. And while that foremost of all rangers of the skies, that first of winged creatures, Garuda, was coursing through the air after wrestling the Amrita, Indra hurled at him his thunderbolt. Then Garuda, the lord of birds, struck with thunderbolt, spake laughingly unto Indra, engaged in the encounter, in sweet words, saying, "I shall respect the Rishi Dadichi, of whose bone the Vajra hath been made. I shall also respect the Vajra, and thee also of 1,000 sacrifices. I cast this feather of mine, whose end thou shalt not attain. Struck with thy thunder, I have not felt the slightest pain." And having said this, the king of feathers, king of birds, cast a feather of his. And all creatures became exceedingly glad, beholding that excellent feather of Garuda, so cast off. And seeing that the feather was very beautiful, they said, "Let this bird be called Suparna, having fair feathers." And Purandara of 1,000 eyes, witnessing this wonderful incident, thought that bird to be some great being and addressed him thus. So he threw his thunderbolt at him, but it didn't do anything. But out of respect for Dadichi, right, because he's the sage that gave his bones to make the lightning bolt itself, and Indra, the position of Indra, you know, because he's the one who's performed great sacrifice to get in that position. Then, out of respect, to show that something happened, he dropped the feather. Right? Otherwise, he could fly on, but it would be seen as arrogance. Right? So, just out of respect, he did that. Yeah. And then Indra then addressed him. And Indra said, "O best of birds, I desire to know the limit of thy strength. I also desire eternal friendship with thee." So ends the 33rd section of the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Section 34. Sauti continued. Garuda then said, "O Purandara, let there be friendship between thee and me, as thou desirest. My strength, know thou, is hard to bear. O thou of 1,000 sacrifices, the good never approve of speaking highly of their own strength, nor do they speak of their own merits. But being made a friend and asked by thee, O friend, I will answer thee. Although self-praise without reason is ever improper." Right? In other words, you don't speak about your own glories and all that. It's just not done yet. Why did he want to be above Vishnu? That I'm not sure. I guess it's just Vishnu, you know, uses a flag, and so then he would want somebody, you know, of great prowess to be on the flag. So then naturally Garuda would be the one. So that would just be, you know, the pastime.
But,
huh? Oh, for the shade, but also birds, they always fly up, you know. So. Yes?
Maybe that because Lord Vishnu is the supreme, something like that.
He's the supreme. So Garuda wants to stay above. It just depends. You could take it from that that he's proud, but there could be some other reason. It's not saying here. Because, see, Mahabharata will be written in a emotional kind of like, you know, projected to an emotional audience, right? That will take great delight in, you know, envy, jealousy, fear, you know, anger, pride. Does that make sense? Because that's much of what goes on, and it also, you know, something's going on. You can really relate to it. Does that make sense? So, even though there may be something else, it's just presented that way. Did you understand? It's just like this. Let us say, you've done something, right? And then, depending upon the audience, you will explain that same thing. Even though you always are telling the truth, you may bring out certain aspects and leave certain aspects. You know? It's like, you get into trouble, let's say, and you know, and you're down at the pumps, you're fighting and playing and just being crazy, right? And so then, you know, the point is, you know, you guys, you're not supposed to fight at the pumps. So then, originally, you had been sent to the pumps to, let's say, wash the pots, but, you know, that didn't get done, just the playing was there. So then you might say, well, you know, I came to wash pots, with the idea of, you know, see, I'm a good boy, I came to wash the pots, and then like that, you know. So that might be how you tell the story to the teacher, right? And you kind of like don't talk so much about the fighting. Yeah, and we got, you know, some of the other boys came and I got distracted and then we started playing like that, like this. Then you might say to a friend, another boy says, yeah, today we went down to the pumps and all those other guys were there and I got them all together and we had a big fight and all that. You don't even bother telling him about the walk, we went there to wash pots, right? And the other one, then you mentioned only that the other boys came, you got distracted. And so you make it look like you came to wash pots, they distracted you, and therefore then the fighting went on, that it wasn't your fault, right? You don't say it wasn't, but it is by how you tell the story, it appears that way, right? But your friends, then you want to show how great you are. So, yeah, we went down there, and I got them all together, and then we were doing so many things. And you don't want to say that I came to wash pots, and then these boys came, and I got distracted, and then I started to play with them. You know, that wouldn't look good. Then, you know, then let's say then, you know, then you go home, and then your mother has heard about this, you know, from the teachers that you've been, you know, fighting at the pumps. And so you say, well, you know, I went to wash the pots and the other boys came and distracted and, you know, we were just playing and that. You don't say that, yeah, I was the one that organized it all and, you know, like that. Then again, you bring up, and now you bring out the point, that washing the pots was good. It's good intention. It's religious. So that's nice. Mother will appreciate. But, you know, we were just playing, you know. So, you know, the mother, the child plays. Okay, that's nice. You understand? So you have three different audiences. The story is told, and none of them are a lie, right? They're all telling the truth. But you bring out what will be appreciated by the particular audience, right? Does that make sense? So that's how the Puranas work, the Tamasic, Rajasic, and Sattvic, you know, or the Mahabharata, because it's for an audience that will appreciate, you know, all the various emotional nuances and all that. There may be some other things. Like the Bhagavatam will just say, the sage was very attracted by the Apsara, right? And they had a child, right? That's it. In one shloka, it's all finished, right? But in another Purana, it might be longer, Mahabharata, it'll give more, you know, description and stuff like that, because the audience appreciates that. Does that make sense? So, in this case, because pride and all that and prowess will be appreciated, it is presented in that way. But it doesn't necessarily mean that actually his purpose was out of pride that, okay, you're Vishnu, you're the greatest, so I'm greater than you. You know? Like that. It's just, you know, there's something, there's the Lord's arrangement there. Right? Like the Lord likes those, what are those things called? Those like arches behind the deity?
Prabhavali.
But you notice on the top of the Prabhavali, there's always a demon's face there. Right? So then that was, you know, the blessing to one demon, because he said, I'll always be above you. You know, he says, you can be on my Prabhavali, you know? Like that. Anything else? No? Okay, and even though here you're asked, one generally doesn't talk about one's own prowess, but because it's a friend, so it's close, so then you can kind of say, but in formal situation, other things, you won't talk about it. You won't say, yes, yes, you know, I'm so powerful, yeah, you know. You don't do that. Okay. Oh, friend, I will answer thee, although self-praise without reason is ever improper. So if there's a reason, then you can say. Like someone says, okay, you want to cook lunch, but how do we know you can cook? Oh, you know, I cooked, you know, in this temple, you know, for the deities for 10 years and like that. And then it's like, okay. You know what I'm saying? So it's like you're saying that, but there's a reason. You've been asked, and it will benefit the other person. It's not for one's own benefit. So he said, I can bear on a single feather of mine, O Shakra, this earth with her mountains and forests, and with the waters of the ocean, and with thee also stationed thereon. Right? I can hold up the whole thing. So, you know, the earth is one thing, the earth with the oceans, because the oceans are immense. Right? And all that, and then you can also be sitting there, and I can still hold on one feather. Right. So when he dropped his feather, it's out of respect, but actually his feather was more powerful than everything else. Right? Know thou, my strength is such that I can bear without fatigue even all the worlds put together with their mobile and immobile objects. Right? It could give the 14 planetary systems. I could hold them up. I wouldn't even get tired. Right? Sauti continued, O Shonaka, after Garuda of great courage had thus spoken, Indra, the chief of the gods, the wearer of the celestial crown, ever bent upon the good of the worlds, replied, saying, It is as thou sayest, everything is possible in thee, except now my sincere and hearty friendship, and if thou hast no concern with the Soma, return it to me. Those to whom thou wouldest give it would always oppose us. Right. So he said, so since we're friends now, give us the Soma back, because who you're going to give it to, the snakes, will always be inimical and fight with us. So therefore, since we're friends, you should give us the Soma. Right? Garuda answered, There is a certain reason for which the Soma is being carried by me. I shall not give the Soma to anyone for drink. But, O thou of 1,000 eyes, after I have placed it down, Thou, O Lord of the heavens, canst then, taking it up, instantly bring it away. Indra then said, O Viparious One, I am highly gratified with these words now spoken by thee. O best of all rangers of the skies, accept for me any boon that thou desirest. So he says, when I put it down for the snakes, then at that time you can pick it up and carry it away, but it's my business to deliver it to them. I have a purpose. So once my purpose is fulfilled, then you can take it. Right, and so Indra, being pleased, said, okay, I give you a boon. Sauti continued, then Garuda, recollecting the sons of Kadru and remembering also the bondage of his mother caused by an act of deception owing to the well-known reason, namely the curse of Aruna, said, Right? So this happened because Aruna cursed his mother that she'll be, you know, put into bondage, slavery, because she was so controlled by her just need to know. It's like she's a slave to it. And it was not for good. Right? It's very, very, how you say? That is the defect of having so much need for something that you have to have it yesterday, you know, without any real reason. So being a slave to such, you know, uncontrollable need, then he said, therefore you will be a slave actually, you know, in physical life. Said, although I have power over all creatures, yet I shall do your bidding. Let, O Sakra, the mighty snakes become my food. The slayer of the Danavas, having said unto him, be it so, then went to Hari, the god of gods, of great soul, and the lord of yogins. And the latter sanctioned everything that had been said by Garuda. Right? So here's the point, is that Indra can give boons, but only if they're approved of by Vishnu. Right? So we see here all these little points that Vishnu is supreme. He said, one who does not decay. Right? Like that. So he doesn't. The other demigods do. Right? They're being killed right there on the battlefield. Right? And then here is without his blessing, then nothing happens. Does that make sense? So Vyasadeva is clearly pointing out that Vishnu is supreme. But unfortunately, because the way it's written into the story, one will be so caught up with the storyline, you know, that one may miss this point, right? So if we only talk about how Vishnu is supreme and great, then there's no interest, so one won't hear it. So in this way, then, because of the storyline, one is hearing the glories of the Lord, but unfortunately, one may be distracted by that storyline itself and not notice the Lord's glories. Does that make sense? Yeah. And the illustrious Lord of Heaven again said unto Garuda, I shall bring away the soma when thou placest it down. And having said so, he bade farewell to Garuda. And the bird of fair feathers then went to the presence of his mother with great speed. Right? Now here's a very powerful person, but he has fair feathers. It means nice, good-looking feathers, right? So because he's so powerful, he doesn't have to have, you know, tough means, not wearing a leather jacket with rivets and spikes and chains and, you know, stuff like that. You know, he's dressed in a refined way, right? So if you're actually powerful, you can dress refined. You don't have to worry about it, right? Why do you have to look tough, right? If you are tough, you don't have to look tough. Does that make sense? Those who aren't tough look tough. Does that make sense? Because if they were tough, why did they have to show it? Yes.
That would make it happen.
Yeah. It means that they're inspired by toughness. And they may be a little tough, but it's not really tough. Right? Does that make sense? And the bird of fair feathers then went to the presence of his mother with great speed. And Garuda in joy then spake unto all the snakes, here have I brought the Amrita. Let me place it on some kusa grass. O ye snakes sitting here, drink it after ye have performed your ablutions and religious rites. Means, I'm going to take the soma and put it on this kusa grass here. So now you should all go take your bath, and after taking your bath and everything and performing your rituals, then come and drink of the nectar, right? Because it's a religious thing. As said by you, let my mother become from this day free, for I have accomplished your bidding. The snakes, having said unto Garuda, be it so, then went to perform their ablutions. Notice he said first. Okay, I brought the nectar, that's what you said. You didn't say after you drink it, this, that. You said bring the nectar by force, your mother's free. I brought the nectar, now you should let my mother be free. They said, be it so. Okay, then they went to take the bath. Meanwhile, Shakra, Indra, taking up the Amrita, wended back to heaven. The snakes, after performing their ablutions, their daily devotions, and other sacred rites, returned in joy, desirous of drinking the Amrita. They saw that the bed of kusa grass, whereon the Amrita had been placed, was empty, the Amrita itself having been taken away by a counteract of deception. and they began to lick with their tongues the kusa grass, as the amrita had been placed thereon. And the snakes of the tongues by that act became divided in twain. Right? So by licking the kusa grass, I don't know if you know, it's very sharp when it's fresh. So by licking it, then their tongues became split. Right? So you know all snakes have the forked tongue. And the kusa grass too, from the contact with amrita, became sacred thenceforth. Right? So kusa grass then after was always sacred and used in sacrifice. Thus did the illustrious Garuda bring amrita from the heavens for the snakes, and thus were the tongues of the snakes divided by what Garuda did. Then the bird of fair feathers, very much delighted, enjoyed himself in those woods accompanied by his mother, of grand achievements, and deeply reverenced by all rangers of the skies. He gratified his mother by devouring the snakes. That man who would listen to this story or read it out in an assembly of good brahmanas must surely go to heaven, acquiring great merit from the recitation of the feats of Garuda. And so ends the 34th section in the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Jai Ho. So we'll end here. Continue on. Oh yeah, question?
Was Vasuki among the snakes?
He may have been among the snakes. I mean, it's the thousand sons of Vinata were there, so they were all there. I'm not sure if up to this point if Ananta was still there, but at some point we'll see later that Ananta gets upset with the snakes and leaves. So I don't know if he already left before this, or if he left after this, but I would expect that Vasuki, Takshaka, they all would have been there, like that. So when you say ate the snakes, doesn't mean these two.
They give the blessing to Garuda, the snakes.
The Valakilia.
No, the snakes. Oh. They give that, okay, you can, your boon is granted. But then they had a right actually to do that because Kadru made a deal with Vinata.
No, but he asked the snakes. He had made the arrangement with that was Kadru's and between Kadru and Vinata, but Garuda went to the snakes and asked, "What can I do that you'll let my mother be free?" Right. So then they said, "Bring the amrita." So they must have approved of it with the mother and like that. You know. So yes.
Vinata knew actually that she was deceived by Kadru.
Did Vinata know she was deceived? I would expect, because she knew that class at 6, 7?
No, it just...
Oh, it just came by.
It just was still talking, so okay. Like, why not?
Okay.
I thought you were going to...
Yeah, no.
Rush out of here right on the top.
No, it's just that they ask a question, so we have a weakness for questions. Okay, so then... What was the question? Oh, did she know? Yeah, because she said it's white, because everyone knows Uche Shravas is white. That's why she would have agreed to the bet. Because she knew it was white. And Kadru, then she was interested in the bet, because she knew she will say it's white, because it is white, but she'll send her children, the snakes, as black hairs in his tail to make it black. So both of them were confident.
So then it was, she deceived her.
Yeah, but that was the point, was just what color is the tail? They didn't say that what color is the tail without us messing around with it. You know? You know, it wasn't like, what is the natural color of his tail? No, it's what is the color of his tail? And right now it happens to be black.
Still, it was dishonest. Because
it was dishonest.
Vasuki and others, they refused.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they refused.
Pious.
The pious nagas. They refused. But the others were worried about, they thought that maybe the mother will revoke the curse by doing it. You know? Mm-hmm. But didn't exactly work. But there's another. It means this is all Astika Parva, so this is all leading up to, you know, how the snakes will be saved from this curse. Okay, so end. Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare